Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers. Each week, you'll hear how they navigate these fulfilling and challenging roles, how they make art and mother their children. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and now podcast host. I hope these interviews inspire and encourage you on your own journey as an artist and mother. Thanks for listening.
For me, it really does feel like I'm keeping my nose to the ground, that my work is very directly related to my existence of having these kids. I mean, my kids only add to this experience because I'm thinking about identity and I'm thinking about how we form our motivations, and to be the responsible party of who gives those motivations to my kids from an outward perspective is such a responsibility and so interesting to think about, and how we can change those legacies in our kids just by simple instruction or simple guidance with these humans that are placed in our care. It's just amazing research, I think, for work. And I'm not always going to have people directly in my care that I can influence and who can influence me in that direct way.
I'm so pleased to share information about our sponsor for this episode, Globe Inn. Globe Inn is a monthly subscription of fair trade goods from all around the world. They provide beautiful, inspiring artisan boxes that are shipped right to your door. And these actually contain a curated collection of handmade items for your home. These items can include everything from Moroccan ceramics to hand-woven Mexican baskets, tea, coffee, or other little food items and goodies. I loved the cozy box that I got. It had a gorgeous hand-painted mug, and my kids and I shared some hot chocolate. It was just such a great treat. So you can actually take $20 off your first box for any 3-month subscription, which is 50% off your first box, using promo code ARTISTMOTHER, all caps, ARTISTMOTHER. So the special thing about this company, Globe Inn, is that every purchase supports artisans in remote communities. Globe Inn is a verified member of the Fair Trade Federation, which means they pay artisans a reliable wage which covers all their basic needs. Every product is connected to powerful stories of the artisans who created them. And you can read all about these stories in a little booklet that comes with your box every month. It was a lot of fun to read through that with my kids. Every month, Globe Inn has 4 to 5 brand new box themes that you choose as your monthly selection. They also make available any of their previous bestsellers. Or you can actually be surprised. You can select that option where they send whatever they choose for you, and it's kind of fun to see what you get. Everything is good, so it doesn't really matter. You also have the option of customizing your subscription box. You can select redeem and put your box credit towards individual fair trade goods that are on sale in the monthly add-on section. Every month, Globe Inn also has an artisan fund where they raise money for one of the artisan groups they partner with for programs they request, like education or different building projects. Globe Inn has a really active community of like-minded women on Facebook. You can go find this group called Maven's Community, which has over 10,000 members. Certainly, you can find someone you can connect with and talk about shopping ethically there. Globe Inn is a monthly subscription box which costs $40 a month. However, you can pay in advance for the year and it can come down to $33 a month. And don't forget, you can use the coupon ARTISTMOTHER, all caps, for $20 off your first box. You can skip a box or cancel anytime. So check out globein.com, GLOBEIN.com, to see this incredible company who are supporting artisan workers all across the globe. Their products are inspiring, beautiful, and, best part, ethical. They would make a great gift for a friend, a subscription for yourself to enjoy, or, guys, it's almost Mother's Day. It would be awesome if you used the Globe Inn subscription and your coupon to ship something to your mom. I bet she would absolutely love it. Thank you to Globe Inn for sponsoring this episode of the Artist Mother Podcast. Laura Travnicek is a painter and homeschooling mom to 3 kids living in Iowa. Her lovely portraits depict people in imitated selfie poses, allowing her space to analyze the areas in her own life where she fabricates or investigates parts of her identity, like race, birth order, motherhood, and more. Laura exhibits frequently in Des Moines and has had a piece at the Woman Made Gallery in Chicago. She's also had two recent solo shows with the Iowa Arts Council and Gravitate. Laura applied to our open call that we had in 2019, and I was so excited to see her work and to select her and be able to talk to her today. So Laura, welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast.
Hello, Kaylin.
So excited to talk to you.
Me too.
Okay, so give us some context. Tell us a little bit about you and your work and, you know, maybe point us back to something in your childhood or, you know, in your history that got you interested in art.
Sure. Well, I've always been interested in drawing and painting. I remember, you know, driving in the car and always just grabbing my sketchbook and staring out the window. And sometimes I would not even draw in my sketchbook. I would just have it on my lap. You know, it was just so comforting to have that there. And after high school, I went to the University of Northern Iowa for art, and then switched 1 year into art education. And then, let's see, I spent 8 years working in social work and teaching before deciding to begin my studio practice about 3.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, I've just always been interested in art, and art has always been my path.
Mm. And, like, what was the thing that got you interested in committing to a studio practice? Like, well, how did you get there?
Yeah, sure. Well,
you said how many years ago did you say that was?
About 3.5 years
three
ago.
And a half, okay. I started.
Yeah.
You were like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be an artist now.
Yeah, kind of. Well, the thing is, I'd always called myself an artist, but I just didn't know how to have a practice. Mm-hmm. After school, my life just kind of took over, and I got married, and I had kids, and I had jobs, and I just didn't know how to motivate myself to have a studio practice that was motivated in just contentment. Mm-hmm. With my life. And so my husband, he just really pushed me, and he said, well, what are you doing during nap time? And I didn't have a good answer to that. And so I just began coming downstairs. We have this finished basement and then this unfinished storage room adjacent to our living area in our basement. And I just would sit on the floor for 2 hours and I just would get my paints out and I just started painting, and I would bring plants downstairs and just anything that I felt like drawing. Mm-hmm. But I felt like just having the dedicated time, the 2 hours while my kids napped, to start a habit of being in my studio was, that was the first thing that I did. And then, and psychologically, what I was doing was trying to figure out what my motivation was to have a practice. There was a lot of fear that was motivating me in my college experience with painting, like fear of like being able to like afford to be at college, or fear of like, you know, getting my scholarship. And so I didn't know how to dedicate myself to a practice that wasn't rooted in fear. Mm. And so I needed to find some motivation to spend time with my art and getting to know my art and getting to know painting again, and asking myself why it was worth it to me to spend 2 hours a day doing it and not, you know, taking a nap with my little kids. Right. And so that's what I was doing mentally. And then another thing I did to begin my practice is I contacted a friend who was a practicing artist in Des Moines, and I just asked him, what can I do to be an artist in Des Moines? And he gave me 3 very practical things that I could do that year. And so mm-hmm. I just made some of those things my goal. Another thing I did was I called a former professor who is a friend of mine, and I asked her to critique some of the work that mm-hmm. I was just beginning to see if I was on, you know, sort of the right track. And then the third thing I did really early on when I was forming my practice was I would just start asking artists to coffee around the Des Moines area, artists that I started following on Instagram that I knew were showing in Des Moines and wanted to know more about their lives. And so I just asked a few artists out to coffee and would just chat about their lives with them to sort of see what I could glean from their practice and incorporate into my own. So,
man, I should have asked you to like give us some tips, you know, for like starting your career, because that's basically what you just did. That's like, you're so resourceful. And just like, you know, just thinking about how you approach that with so much intention and really rooted in like actual, you know, community and relationships, not just like social media or, you know, other things, I think is really inspiring and really important for people to hear.
Thank you.
So thank you for sharing that. Okay, Laura, before we get too much further, like kind of talking about your background and some of the things that influence your work, can you talk about it, what it looks like, just in case anybody hasn't heard or hasn't seen your work yet?
Sure. Yeah, I'm interested in sort of the psychological negotiation we endure with every interaction we have, depending on our motivations or our shifting identities. And so I do that. I explore these ideas by creating paintings that are usually comprised of two figures. I source my reference photos from friends and family who take and email me selfies of themselves. And then I analyze those selfies and I pair together the figures that I think go together to create these sort of fictional stories about relationship. I'm really interested in thinking about how my participants identify when they take a self photo and send it to me. Like, there's somebody that a participant that I usually ask who always dresses up before they take their self photo and send it to me. And then I have other friends and family who, you know, take their photos and just send them to me like as they are. And I just think it's so interesting to think about what my participants are thinking about before they point the camera at themselves, knowing that I'm going to use it for whatever I want. And I think there's just a lot to say about how, you know, we view ourselves or how we view even what I'm going to do with it, which is, you know, making paintings out of them. And so that's a really interesting component to my art as well.
Are they oil or acrylic, or like what are kind of the materials that you're using? What size are they? Like, talk a little bit about, you know, like your process in terms of materials.
Sure. I use oil paint. And so I collage the image that I'm thinking about. I print out every picture that my participants send me. And then I just like lay them all out on my floor, and I'm just playing around with different compositions. And
because you're combining two figures usually, right? So you're like kind of taking one photo from some person and another person's photo and like playing with how they interact.
Exactly. Yeah, so cool. I'm thinking about stories, and I'm thinking about if they're posed the same way. Like sometimes I'll get a lot of pictures where all of the women are sort of doing the same thing with their hand by their ear or by their face, which is, I think, a really cultural thing women do, you know, putting their hand by their chin or their ear or their face.
And it's hard for me to see that. I used to be a photographer like forever ago, and it's hard for me to see that in like posed photography now and not be critical of it. Like, I'm like, why are you doing that? We don't stand there with like our hand halfway tucking our hair behind our ear. Like,
no, you know, culturally hundreds of years ago, it was a queen, and I can't remember what her name was, but she invented that scarf that goes all around the chin. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't think so.
It's like, in older paintings where the scarf is sort of like going underneath the chin and then they may be wearing a hat. Mm-hmm. And she didn't like the way her chin looked, you know, like mm-hmm. she thought it was too big. And so she started to wear the scarf to sort of hide that. And I think it's interesting to think about how maybe that's one of the reasons why women hide their face or their neck in pictures. And because it's just this this cultural unconscious thing that's been passed down. So I lay out my images and find a story that emerges. And then I draw the image onto a canvas. And then I do an underpainting, which is a neutral color of shades and highlights. Mm-hmm. And after that dries, I start to apply really thin layers of color called glazes until the painting gets built up enough until I feel like it's finished. Mm.
So you have some formal background in, like, did you take oil painting classes in school?
I took a lot of painting classes. I've always painted really thin, and I would always get so irritated with myself that I couldn't paint in more of an impasto style. I couldn't get how somebody could make the paint look so beautiful and built up on their first go, because my paint was always so thin. And so I kind of just on my own came to the understanding that I work best doing this thin glazing method, and then just sort of have taught myself and gleaned what I have been able to through research.
It's just, I don't know, it's like inspiring to hear you sort of talk about putting in the effort to learn a skill, and like your work is so, you know, it's so great. So like just to see like and hear you talk about it and see that it's paying off is really, really nice to hear.
Thank you.
Okay, Laura, so why don't you tell me a little bit about, you know, like just this idea of identity and how this, like, you know, you're kind of breaking down, this idea of identity, but also like, you know, bringing it out and talking about, you know, your own identity. You have like Japanese heritage, and, you know, just some different like stories in your ancestry that you're thinking about as you're making your work. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So my grandmother immigrated to the United States from Japan in the 1960s, and her ethnicity was not well accepted in the United States. And so she just really had to learn how to be as white as possible. And then she raised my mom and my aunts and uncles in a very American way. My uncle's name is Jake, not Jacob, because that was a very American name. My mom and her siblings were, you know, they were, they had to sit at the back of the bus. And so the effort was to just be as American as they could be. And so my mom and dad were married, and we lived in a small town. And even though I'm only one quarter Japanese in a very small, mostly white town, I was the Japanese kid in my school. And so much so that one little boy almost got suspended for calling me a commie Jap. I mean, it was just this, it was weird because we were very white in some circumstances, but in other circumstances, I was very Japanese based on my surroundings. And we would go to my grandma's house, my mom's mom, and we would have green tea, you know, ice cream, and eat sushi. And the culture was just so different there. And then maybe in the same day, we'd go to my Scottish German grandma's house, and the culture was just so different in both of those environments. And I just always remember feeling like in between, or like there was this this complexity to it and this inconsistency that I couldn't understand. So then when I went to college, I mean, I was Japanese 1 minute, and then I went to college and I was very white. And so I've always wrestled with this sense of place in this sense of my identity and how my identity can shift based on who I'm around and what outside, you know, circumstances mm-hmm. are happening. And I can use it to my advantage if I want to, or it hurts me in ways, you know, like mm-hmm. in the case of this little boy who was picking on me. And so, yes, I'm very interested in how we can sort of shift and change our identities in those ways. My older sister is older than me, but in my family, because of our dynamic, I usually take the firstborn sibling role. I'm very organized, and I'm the one who usually hosts family gatherings. And so I also have this, there's also this inconsistency with my role in my family with birth order. And mm-hmm. so that's just another thing that I think about when I'm making my paintings, when I'm doing my work.
So, I you know, I'm like curious, like just thinking about your grandmother and how your mom was raised, like, how were you raised? Like, do you feel like did your parents try to like instill this like sense of like this dual identity? Like, or was it sort of like, did you feel like there were sort of boundaries that were put up? Did they like kind of offer you this like place to talk about it and this like place to explore it? Like, what was that like?
Sure. No, I mean, it just wasn't, it wasn't something that we talked about, but I don't know if anyone thought to talk about it mm-hmm. either. I remember my grandma used to come to my elementary school and she'd put a kimono on my teacher, or we would do origami in Girl Scouts mm-hmm. and stuff. So it was sort of this like novelty mm-hmm. thing in some ways, but I don't know if they wrestle with it the same way that I do. Another piece to the puzzle for me is that my sisters have dark hair, which lends them to looking a little bit more Japanese. And I take after my Scottish German side, and my hair is just lighter and I have freckles. Mm-hmm. And so I think I've always wrestled with I don't look as Japanese mm-hmm. as my sisters even might. And so I've always been aware of that big difference too. Mm.
Do you think part of like you wrestling with it is sort of exacerbated by this like culture where we have to, you know, put our identity in this box of like, I'm a painter and I'm an artist and I'm a mother and I'm a white person or I'm a black person, or like, you know, we sort of like have this framework for processing who we are that's so limited. You know, is that why you sort of like chose the selfie to like be this like identifier for your work and to be like the thing that you are processing through?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you nailed it.
It's just interesting to like think, you know, just go back to your comment about like being certain ways in certain spaces. And you know, like I think of like privilege when you talk about that, and like other dialogues that are talking about this, you know, in America, like people who, you know, can't walk certain places after dark because they might get pulled over, or, you know, like people, you know, like people with darker skin who can't wear hoodies out in public because they're going to be perceived as, you know, like one way. And just like, I don't know, just thinking about how these judgments and perceptions really taint, you know, the way we view each other.
Right. Right. I agree.
It's just interesting to think about it and how it relates to your painting specifically. And, you know, I think like your work is really interesting because you do combine these like you have these like interesting combinations of people. And like, I'm kind of like wondering like, what is the relationship between the people when you look, you know, when you look at your work? And like some of the work at first glance, I think it's the same person. And then like, I realize that it's like not the same person. And so I'm like, are they friends? Like, what is their relationship? you know, it's just like interesting to think about how their body language is communicating to each other or not. I think it adds this like different layer to your work. Like what are, you know, like how do you pick like your combinations of people?
Sure. Well, one of them, the one with there's two gals and they're both wearing a green shirt. If you scroll through my Instagram, but I picked that one, those two selfies. One is, they're two of my friends and they were like best friends in high school. And I asked them separately to send me selfies and they sent me all of these poses. And then they were posed the exact same way in one of them. And I thought, well, that's just so interesting because they were such good friends when they were younger. And even though they don't spend a lot of time together now, they still sort of mimic each other in this friend way, which I thought was nice. When I'm posing pictures together, when I'm comprising them, there's just a lot of things that I'm thinking of, and they're usually based on what I'm researching and stuff. So I pick different combinations based on different things, but I really like looking for comparisons or direct opposites.
I think too, their painting is interesting because kind of like going back to this idea of like a woman sort of like intuitively hiding her body or making herself look smaller. Like they're kind of like, you know, wrapping their arms around, like it's like they're trying to like sit in a way that like makes you feel less than, or you know, I really like that play like of the figures. You know, like you have another one where you have two women who are both doing the ear, like the hair behind the ear thing, and you know, two women that are covering their face. Like, so body language obviously plays a huge role in the work, like not just like taking a selfie, but like specifically what your body is communicating and thinking about that.
Yes, which then helps aid my story in my paintings.
So interesting. I love your work. It's just fun to like hear you talk about it. Okay, Laura, why don't you tell me a little bit about like your life as a mom? You homeschool. Are you still homeschooling? Like, do you plan to homeschool forever? What does your day look like now? Because you know that I'm currently homeschooling my 7-year-old, and then we have two littler ones. So like, what are the ages of your kids? And like, you know, how did you arrive at homeschooling, and how is that like affecting your life as an artist?
Sure. Great questions. So I have 3 children. My oldest will be 9. And then I have a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old, and I homeschool all of them. And let's see, I wanted to homeschool. I actually didn't mean to homeschool. I was a teacher. And then because my job was shifting just so, we made the decision for me to stay home. And then it just sort of developed naturally for us. When my son was about 2, we would sit at the table and I would have like 5 books and a dry erase board and some markers and a puzzle. And I would just, I think because I had been a teacher, maybe in a classroom, I just needed some structure, you know, to our day like that. And so we would sit at the table and just sort of go through our things. And we just had so much fun together that homeschooling just sort of was the next natural step, I think, to continue learning together. And so then I did a lot of research for homeschooling before, you know, when my son was just 2, and then I had a little daughter too at the time. And I would go to these panel discussions that a friend would put on where she invited a lot of homeschool parents to come, and they just shared their experiences, which gave me a lot of freedom, I think, to plan our homeschooling journey in a really unique way. But I felt really confident about what we were doing because we had researched so much and we had talked to so many people who had been through it. And so, so we started homeschooling preschool. And then now my son is in 3rd grade, and then I have a 2nd grader and a preschooler. And so let's see, we school during the day from about 8 o'clock until about lunchtime. And then my kids do a rest time, and my bigger kids read, and my son takes a nap. from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock. And then when they wake up, their day is over. Their school day is over.
That's kind of how we do it too. It's like morning is, you know, well, I mean, I homeschool my oldest, but that's because he's, you know, to me, the only school age. Like, we do a little bit with our 3-year-old, but not, you know, it's not super forced, but,
sure.
But yeah, it's like he, you know, kind of the first 3 to 4 hours of the day, it's like he does his independent work or we do a little bit together. Mm-hmm. And then we're just like managing the other two, you know, like just trying to keep them entertained and, you know, not bothering Finley so he can actually work.
Yes.
And then like,
I've got
too. Yeah, like that nap time of like, that's when you get to paint, you know?
Yes, I do. Yeah. So I also paint in the morning. I paint from 5 to 7.
Oh, nice.
And then my husband, and then my husband gets my kids up. So sometimes they'll kind of scatter down here into my studio space. And then I'll come up. And then my husband also makes our breakfast.
So yeah, mine does too. I was like, you have to do breakfast. I can't think of any more meals. Like, please.
Yes.
Take over breakfast.
Nice. I know. Well, and then just to have, for me, that drive, kind of drive home time in between my studio time, and then all of a sudden the kids are awake and everything's started, you know, our day has started. And sometimes I'll have, you know, some schoolwork stuff to prep. So it's just really nice that he takes that so I can have some transition time into teaching.
So you're teaching. Do you have a studio now? So you started in your basement studio, and now do you have a studio outside the home?
Nope, I still have a studio in the basement, but I'm no longer sitting on the floor 3.5 years later, so it's improved. Okay. It's much improved. Yeah.
So, like, you just come down, you know, right in the morning when you get up, or I'm sure you're setting your alarm early to get up by 5. Like, I really appreciate that, too, like, just sharing that, I don't know, that commitment. Like, that's a lot. I mean, I don't do that. Like, I don't get up before my kids are up to work. And, you know, I probably should, because that leaves me stressed the rest of the day. It's like, I need the nap time so bad, because that's the only time I get some days. I mean, my husband stays home 3 mornings a week, so I still get more time than a lot of, you know, stay at home moms or whatever. But
sure. Yeah. I used to do it from 1 to 3 only. And then my son, you know, they go through that phase where they're thinking about quitting a nap, but I know that if we just keep being consistent, then he'll go to it, that stage. And so we were in that stage, and I was starting to get so frustrated because it would be, you know, 1:30 or 1:45 by the time, you know, we did the back and forth into bed routine. And I didn't like that I was feeling so irritated that he wouldn't just take a nap, you know? And my priority is them. And so I just didn't like what it was doing, you know, in my mental space. And so I started getting up around 5, like maybe 8 months ago, just within this past year. And it really has been nice to have out of the way. I don't mean it in like a, you know, like I want to get it done with out of the way, but
yeah, but it's like you've already accomplished that, you know?
Right. And then now, you know, we're past that hump, and now my kids are in their bedrooms, you know, reading or napping from 1 to 3. And so a lot of times I do come back down here, and now it's sort of a bonus. Now I get 4 hours during the day when I really only had 2 before I added in that morning time, which has been so nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, it's just interesting to hear you talk about that. I think for me, I'm like that, you know, like what you said about the, like, homeschooling your kids is sort of the priority, and you've made that commitment, and I'm not sure it's my priority right now. like, which sounds bad. Like, I feel bad admitting that, but like we are homeschooling right now because we don't have very good, like, a good educational system. Like, and I like homeschooling. It's not that I don't like it, but I also really want to work, you know? And so I'm just kind of like towing this line of like, but my work is the priority, but homeschooling is the priority. And I don't think anybody really wins in that dance. I think it's like, you know, but then I'm like, but maybe that, like, I mean, I'm not willing to give up either right now, you know?
Sure. I tell my kids, I mean, we talk very openly about, you know, what the best options are for everybody. And I really like homeschooling, but I always tell my kids, you know, if this isn't working for you, there are other options. Mm-hmm. And if it's not working for me, there are other options. This has to be, you know, this covenant between us that right. we're going to learn together. And, you know, and they really don't fuss about their work. I mean, we just yeah. have a consistent schedule that they do their job. And I think for me, as long as it's easy, is not the right word, because, you know, it can be challenging, but as long as it's working for them and it's working for me, we'll keep doing it. But I'm always open to other options if it gets to a point where I feel like I would like more time, or they need yeah. more of something at a different school. So for sure.
Yeah. My son is really self-motivated too. So that is nice, because he's like, I don't get pushback from him. It's not like we're struggling. It's like I'm internally struggling, because I'm like just so ambitious. I want to do more. But I also yeah. really want this time with my kids. Like, so it just, I don't know, it's just this weird, like, I know certain people are listening and are probably like, just give it up, or, you know, but like, I can't give it up. I'm stuck in this messy phase, and my mind, like, I want to just like clean it up and make it neater, but, you know, I'm not willing to give anything up. So I don't know.
Great. Have you ever listened to any interviews with Alice Neal?
I've listened to the new Getty ones that came out.
And she says she says you can't give it up yeah. for 3 or 4 years, which is so convicting mm-hmm. when you think about, you know, this work that artists do, and whether or not it is a possibility to give it up for these right. years when we've got little kids and you've got ideas, yeah. you know?
Yeah. So, I've talked to some artists who have given it up, and in some ways I admire that, but I also just know that I would not be very happy. So I can't do it. Okay, Laura, let's talk about a couple more things before we wrap up. I'm interested to hear you, like, you know, really just going back to this idea of what you said in the beginning about like starting to build your career. I think, you know, one mm-hmm. of my goals for the podcast is to like interview people who are in all stages of their career as an artist, and you know, not only talking to people who like whatever have these amazing connections and shows and stuff, but like everyday artists just trying to do the work and doing, you know, starting and building and slowly building up on their careers. And so I count it a privilege to talk to you during this time when you're like, you know, you're an emerging artist, like you're someone who is still very much figuring it out. And I love that. And so I wanted to hear you sort of talk about a little bit of like strategy, like what are you doing to like get your work out there in the world? Like, obviously you're committing to the practice and you're making the work, but like, what are some, you know, goals that you have for yourself, and what are some things that you're doing to like build out your connections? And, you know, are you just submitting to a ton of shows? Like, how are you sort of, you know, making this career part of it happen for yourself?
Sure. Let's see. I do submit to all the shows that I can in the Des Moines area. And because I have 3 small kids, I'm not able to go to a lot of things, a lot of events. So I do try to follow people and events on social media, and I try to comment, and I try to be encouraging, and, you know, just like show my, you know, support mm-hmm. the ways that I can via social media. And then honestly, I don't know if I'm, aside from that, I think only being 3.5 years into a practice still makes me feel like I am still just building up my body of work mm-hmm. and having a relationship with my work that is, you know, like, I think we're still figuring each other out. Mm-hmm. And I applied to a market, like a market style event really early on. And it kind of ruined me for about 6 months because I was really doing work just to sell. I mean, I was like making these paintings that were really quick to sell at this market, and it was a lot of work. And then I just ended up not being really proud of those paintings because I was propelled by this, you know, this deadline of this market. Mm-hmm. And so ever since then, I've really tried to take an approach that is the long road in this art making adventure, and just realizing that it's not like I'm going to make a body of work and then be done working. I'm going to just keep being an artist and building my career and doing the work. But I think because of the fact that I'm a mom with little kids and I can't be so physically visible, what I can do with my time is keep my nose to the grind and just keep practicing and getting better at the actual craft that I want to do. Another thing that I have started to do, and I was getting frustrated a little while ago about how I can only make a few paintings a year because they were bigger. Mm-hmm. And so some small practical things that I've started to do so that I can ship more work to more shows, so that I can feel free to apply to shows that are further away, is to make smaller work or more works on paper, which I had never done before. So I guess that's like the small shift that I'm making right now, is trying to make work that's a little bit smaller. So it's more, I'm able to accomplish it in a smaller amount of time without losing the quality. And then works on paper is a new adventure too, which I'm enjoying. So
it is so refreshing to hear your perspective, because I feel like so many people just want the sort of the quick answer, like the, you know, how do I build up a career? How do I become a famous artist? And it's like, you know, without even like committing to a practice and really doing the work over a long period of time and building up this relationship with the work. So it's, I don't know, it's like really, really nice to hear you just say that, like, you know, it's not that you're not like thinking about those things, but like, you know, you're really understanding this perspective of like, I am still in my infancy, you know, phase, and I really want to just work on making work that is excellent and not so much, you know, be consumed by, I don't know, all of the needs and accolades that we think we need to like dive into right away. Do you ever feel like you're missing out on things, or like do you ever get pulled into that direction mentally, or do you feel like you're pretty good at, you know, kind of putting your hands up against those things?
Sure. No, definitely. I get, you know, I get down if I see, you know, somebody having maybe success right away, that can be frustrating. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it's a lot of mental work, I think, I think being an artist is just a lot of mental work, because we're constantly doubting ourselves and doubting whether or not it's worth it and stuff. And so I think that's why I have to always come back to the reason why I do this, because for me, it's like, it's the way I process my thoughts, and it's the way that I process, like I said, my identity and just these complexities of humans and myself and my family and, just having kids and being a mom and being able to experience this like full human experience by mm-hmm. seeing a child grow and their thoughts develop. I mean, that's like ground level research. Mm-hmm. I think for me, that's how I view it. You know, it's just, I don't think that if I'm not, you know, if I don't have like a million Instagram followers, that these years are wasted, because for me, it really does feel like I'm keeping my nose to the ground, that my work is very directly related to my existence of having these kids. I mean, my kids only add to this experience, because I'm thinking about identity and I'm thinking about how we form our motivations, and to be the responsible party of who gives those motivations to my kids from an outward perspective mm-hmm. is such a responsibility and so interesting to think about, and how we can change those legacies in our kids just by simple instruction or simple guidance with these humans that are placed in our care. It's just amazing research, I think, for work. And I'm not always going to have people directly in my care that I can influence and who can influence me in that direct way. And so I am in it for the long game mm-hmm. of this. And I do hope that I can continue to realize that I'm in this season just for a short time. And I hope that I can keep, when I get down about other people who are more successful than me, I hope I can remember that scarcity is not an issue mm-hmm. for me or anybody else, that there's a place for me and there's a place for everybody who is doing hard work and just being persistent and mm-hmm. consistent in what they're doing.
I'm already like processing what quotes I'm going to pull from this interview, and they're all so good. Like you've said so many inspiring things, Laura, and I'm just really grateful for the way that you are deeply, you know, rooted in intention in both your parenting and your art practice, and that you're willing to share about that. So thank you so much for your great words.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So final five questions. This is just a way for us to get to know you a little bit better, and you know, for you to like share something a little more down to earth. So would love for you to just share what you're currently reading with us.
I have just started the book called The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van der Kolk. And it's about trauma and about how trauma we experience changes our bodies and our brains, the way that we think. And so I'm very interested in the things that happen to us and how they influence, you know, just ourselves in these unconscious ways. Mm-hmm. And then the other book that I'm excited to start that I haven't begun yet is called The TechWise Family mm-hmm. by Andy Crouch. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah, our church did like a little series based on that book.
Oh, did it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was good.
A friend has loaned it to me, so I'm interested in reading that one.
Yeah, it's definitely a good book. Like lots of like common sense stuff, but also stuff that maybe you wouldn't like think about, you know, without sort of the impetus of the book. So,
sure.
Okay, what are you currently watching? I'm guessing you probably go to bed pretty early if you get up at 5 to go to the studio.
My husband and I will make a plan usually to watch a show in bed at 9 and then try to go to bed. Because sometimes I come back down here then, because my husband works a couple nights out of the week too.
Okay.
So sometimes I come back down from like 7 or, you know, 7 to 9 usually. And so we watch a show, and those shows are usually either The Great British Bake Off or like Grand Designs, which is like a house show on Netflix. We're interested in doing The Crown, the next season of The Crown, but we just haven't really found time yet to do that one. But usually it's those types of shows that we're interested in.
I just started the newest season of The Crown, and I didn't realize that they were doing different actors and actresses for the whole, like, it makes sense because like now everybody is like a generation older, but it just like kind of shocked me in the beginning. And I was like, wait, what? Am I watching the right show? Like, where's, you know, because I loved the, I don't know her name, but I loved the main
actress. Me too. I'm glad you said that, because I had heard that, but I hadn't thought about that recently. Yeah. So now I'd be so shocked when I do watch it.
It's just a little shocking when you start watching it and you're like, can I believe these people? Like, you know, you build trust with like actors and actresses, you know, like based on the roles they play. And so it was like just interesting to like have to rethink through like the characters.
I
love that show. Okay, what would you do if you had a whole weekend to yourself?
A whole weekend to myself? I'd probably go visit a lot of art shows, and I hardly ever make it to our art center here in Des Moines. And paint. I think I the same as everybody else says.
Yeah. More studio time. Yeah, I think going to see shows is like a big one too, because just because that like gets pushed down the priority list when you have young kids.
It does. Sure.
Okay, what is your beverage of choice?
Coffee.
That's also like the most common answer. Yeah. Everyone's like, gotta get me through coffee.
Well, I do that first thing. I mean, I say I work 5 to 7, but I work like when the coffee's done. Yeah. Until 7.
5:07 to 7.
Yeah. I have my coffee before I come down to work. So that's priority, I guess. Yes.
Okay, Laura, in the spirit of community, because we can't do this alone, I always like to offer a closing place for you to share a shout out to someone who supports you in your work.
Yeah, thank you. I would say my husband for sure. I mean, he also has an art degree. He did photography. Just always so supportive. You know, I think when you are married to someone who's also creative, they just get it in a way that, and they can he pushes me in a way that I don't know if someone else could. And it's just such a good person to, you know, pass ideas by and stuff because he understands that world. Mm-hmm. So my husband, and then, I have some professors in college who just really mean so much to me when I was in school, who just pushed me and, really cared for me. So my professor, Chris Streed, was just majorly impactful to me. She's an artist also working, nationally and internationally. So she's a wonderful artist to look up to, but, yeah, I would say some professors in college and my husband for sure. Mm.
Well, again, thank you so much for taking the time and, just sharing about your life and your art practice. It was a really, inspiring, you know, thing to think about. And, yeah, I'm just grateful.
Thank you, Kaylin. I'm grateful too.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.